Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Well, as we've mentioned before in the takeaway, the Afghanistan war is not only the longest war for the United States, it's now longer than the U.S. I mean, the Russian war in Afghanistan. When the U.S. invaded Afghanistan in 2001, it was called Operation Enduring Freedom, and oh, how it has endured. The purpose, partly, was to remove the Taliban from power there, and they did get the Taliban out of government in Kabul, but the Taliban's proving to be a much more evasive and adaptable foe than NATO had predicted. So listen to this comment from Major General Philip Jones. He's in charge of the effort to help fighters leave the insurgency.
One of the things that's been proved remarkably resilient about the insurgency is their ability to recruit people. And right in the earlier stages of the campaign, people always said that, you know, fighting your way out of this insurgency is not the answer, because, you know, there's a propensity for them to be able to recruit more or less what they need.
So to counteract that, or perhaps as a deterrent then, NATO has built some formidable prison facilities. But the dicey U.S. reputation for maintaining prisons after Abu Ghraib complicates the image of even a shiny new $60 million prison in Farwan. Paul Wood with our partner, the BBC, got a tour.
We're now in one of the housing units, which is a huge shed with a series of, I guess I would describe them as very large metal cages.
The symbol of U.S. occupation in Afghanistan is not this facility, but Bagram, the old prison that embodies Afghanistan's brutal history of foreign invaders. It's located inside an old Soviet-era hangar, and locals today call it Obama's Gitmo. This new facility in Farwan is intended to make clear that abuse is a thing of the past, and here's one way they're doing it.
Here, the inmates learn to make bread, among other things. The idea is that many local people join the Taliban not for ideological reasons, but for practical ones. They need a job. Here's Colonel Kevin Burke, Director of Reintegration.
What we've got here is a demonstration classroom. These detainees will be baking bread for the detainees in the facility when the Afghans take the facility over. One of the things we wanted them to do was learn, in part of their vocational training in bread baking, is the Afghan customary way of baking bread, which is in a tandoor oven, as you see here, wood fire.
From lessons on cuisine to lessons on realpolitik, Taliban style. No cave hideaway here, but a rendezvous with a senior Taliban official right in the center of Kabul. The government controls the capital, but the insurgents still seem to come and go as they please. That's Malawi Abdulrahman. He's wearing dark glasses and is wrapped in a peach-colored pashmina, but he's in no mood for compromise. In broad daylight, in the middle of Kabul, there'll be no peace, he says, until every last American soldier has left.
My advice to the Americans is, if they love their lives, if their families are suffering from their presence here or their deaths in Afghanistan, they should go. As long as one American remains in Afghanistan, we won't stop our jihad.
Later this week, NATO leaders will meet in Lisbon. At the top of their agenda, a roadmap for, hopefully, a graceful exit out of Afghanistan. How possible that is, let's ask that of Christine Fair. She's a professor at the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown University. Good morning, Christine.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for having me again.
Well, we've talked a lot about different counterinsurgency strategies to win hearts and minds. What's your opinion of this one, sort of rebranding the prison system and teaching and vocational training?
Well, I think there's another important element that didn't come up in all of the reporting, and that is that we have learned that the old prisons were major terrorist recruitment centers. In other words, these were places where maybe individuals just got on the wrong side of Afghan intelligence. We know after 9/11, a lot of folks that were probably not that terribly dangerous just got picked up in sweeps by the Americans. And what they learned in prison was how to be a more effective terrorist. And we have seen this all across Afghanistan. So similarly, many of the Taliban leadership were individuals that were previously held down at Gitmo. So there is a PR face to what is very much a very problematic and real counterterrorism problem, and that is that the previous prisons, and by the way, this is just one, much of Afghanistan's, detention centers, as they're being called, are deeply problematic and remain dens of terrorist recruitment and insurgent recruitment.
Well, this idea that by vocational training, by giving people the means to support themselves, training them in a new job, that will keep them from joining the Taliban. Is that reasonable?
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of General Jones, known him for several years. This is one of the animating thoughts behind what's being called the reintegration program, and that is separate from reconciliation, which is a political process being led by the Afghan government, ostensibly. I do have fairly significant differences, though, with this diagnostic. The idea of reintegration is that these folks are primarily engaging in the insurgency because of financial opportunities, and that by providing them vocational training and so forth, that they might be discouraged from reentering the insurgency. I've got problems with this on multiple fronts. One, there isn't really solid evidence that this is why folks are joining the insurgency. A lot of this information comes from people that have been detained. Why are you fighting us? Only the most profound moron would admit, I am fighting jihad against you because you are an infidel and this is ideological. Any self-preserving individual trying to get out of these prisons, newfangled or not, are going to try to explain their behavior in the most benign way, and that is, oh, I'd love to find an alternative to feeding my family. Fact is, they make so much money off of being insurgents, but it's not just the money. It's the social cachet. It's more like a gangster. It's not the money that the gangster gets. In fact, we know from some work done by economists that drug dealers largely live with their mothers because they make so little money. But it's the other accoutrement, the social cachet of being a Talib. The fact that you have really achieved notoriety in your field through the meritocracy of jihad when there are very few meritocracies in Afghanistan. We can't replace that by teaching them to make bread, literally. We can't replace those social amenities accrued to the insurgents by virtue of their being insurgents.
So this adorable little BBC-inspired scene here of the bread baking is more of a pilot project. It makes somebody feel good, but it's not even remotely the scale to do anything.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And of course, the other issue is we know this from every other place we've been involved in counterinsurgency. If you give people training, if you give people education, but you can't grow the economy to actually get them jobs, you could actually be increasing their frustration because you've essentially raised their expectation that they're going to have some valuable skill that ultimately does not materialize in what we tell them they're going to get. That's a job.
Christine Fair always giving us realistic view of what's going on in Afghanistan.
Talibs do not live by bread alone.
Yeah. I'm a professor at the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown University. Thanks so much, Christine.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You
bye-bye.
Too.